Good afternoon, you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 7th of March, the year 2012, for Juneau Afternoon. My name is Jeff Fine, I'm your host. Today we'll find out about a new grading group in town with guest Jennifer Walker. We'll talk with the director of the new serving movie, Splinters, showing next week at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. We'll also talk to Ed Byerski about the Lynn Canal Learning Conference coming up soon. We'll also learn about this week at Eagle Crest and the High Gravity Games. And Writers Almanac Music more today on a Juneau Afternoon. The forecast for today looks like rain and snow with about 2 inches of snow expected, perhaps. Forecast for tonight, low temperatures around 34 degrees and a little bit of rain. Forecast for Thursday, looks like more rain, heavy at times with high temperatures around 41 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week, tribal leaders from across the country are in Washington, D.C. for the Tribal Nations Legislative Summit. They're hearing from cabinet officials and meeting with lawmakers. Matt Laszlo has more from Capitol Hill.
The Obama administration is sending top officials to meet with tribal leaders this week, including the Secretaries of Education and Health and Human Services. White House Senior Policy Advisor for Native American Affairs, Kimberly Teehee, says that's no accident.
And really, this is a reflection of the level of engagement in this administration at the most senior level, who really want to hear from you and have and make sure that you know that you have a seat at the policymaking table, and that every administration official at the most senior level is engaged.
Jefferson Keel, president of the National Congress of American Indians, says this White House has established a great relationship with tribes, but he says now he'd like to see more allies placed at the Office of Management and Budget, so that Indian country isn't just treated as numbers in a budget.
We still need some type of a senior advisor or an Indian desk in the OMB somewhere, so that OMB really understands what the needs are in Indian country, not just as an appropriator.
But Keel says during the legislative summit, he's hoping Native leaders will be active in convincing lawmakers to prioritize the needs of Indian country.
Our focus here with the winter session is always to assist our tribal leaders and tribal and members of NCAI in their meetings with congressmen and other members of the federal agencies on Capitol Hill.
The legislative summit is scheduled to go through Thursday. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding a hearing on President Obama's budget. Senators will discuss the proposed 2013 budget for Native programs Thursday in Washington, D.C. According to the National Congress of American Indians, the budget proposal maintains support for critical programs, but there are cuts that would set back progress in Indian country. Last month, the Obama administration released a nearly $4 trillion budget request to Congress. A musher in Minnesota is running his sled dog team to the state's capital to protest sulfide mining. Native communities from across Minnesota are supporting the effort. WTIP's Kelly Schoenfelder reports.
On Sunday, several members of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa gathered in Duluth to mark the fourth day of Frank Moe's dog sled journey. Moe is currying a petition with more than 10,000 signatures against sulfide mining to the legislature. Karen Diver, chairwoman of the Fond du Lac Band, spoke at the gathering.
We will not let the lake be harmed, and we will not let its watershed be harmed. We will not let the ceded territories where we have reserved rights, not special rights, not rights anybody gave to us, but reserved rights to hunt, fish, and gather in the traditional way in all of our ceded territories, from the middle of Minnesota all the way over to Sault Ste. Marie. If you stand with us on protecting the environment, then you stand with us on helping us protect our sovereignty and our seat at the table.
Frank Moe and his sled dog team will arrive in St. Paul on Thursday morning, where another rally will take place at 10:30 on the Minnesota State Capitol front lawn. For National Native News, I'm Kelly Schoenfelder in Grand Marais.
During this week in 1978, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled tribal courts do not have inherent criminal jurisdiction to try and punish non-Indians and need congressional authorization to do so. The case involved the Suquamish tribe and a non-native. Mark Oliphant was arrested during the tribe's Chief Seattle days on the Port Madison Reservation in Washington. He was charged with assaulting a tribal officer and resisting arrest. He claimed he was not subject to tribal authority. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick, Click, Give when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOW News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guest is Jennifer Walker, who is being involved with a new writing group called Write in the Rain. Jennifer, thank you very much for being in the station today.
Thank you.
So Write in the Rain, that sounds like an obvious title for a writing group here in Juneau.
Yeah, one of our members came up with it. Therese, I think her last name is Hargrave.
How many members are in the group?
Right now we have 6, but it's real new, so.
What's the purpose of it?
We want to encourage each other to write, and then also critique each other's writing. And we'll also be reading about writing and, you know, trying to glean inspiration and insight through those readings.
What's the secret for critiquing writing without being too heavy-handed?
Maybe
that's needed at some point.
Yeah, honestly, the more honest you are, the better the critique is, but it also depends on where the writer's at and whether or not they want the honest critique. I know when I was just starting, I wanted to hear mostly good things. I needed to hear mostly good things about my writing. But the more comfortable I grew with my writing, the more honest I needed my critiquers to be.
What kind of things do you write? Fiction, nonfiction, how-to books?
Personally, I write memoir and then fiction kind of based on my family.
Any other members of the group?
There's a fiction writer, somebody who's written a first draft of a novel, a couple of fiction writers, somebody who's written screenplays, and so far that's all I've gotten to know.
And you had your first meeting last Saturday at the Rookery. How are the meetings structured?
We come in and write for the first 5 to 15 minutes. It can be either a free write or a write to a prompt. And then on the first Saturdays of the month, we critique each other's writings. We normally do 2 in a meeting. So we sit and discuss the writing, the strengths, and the places where we see room for improvement, and then sort of let the writer ask us some questions. So we do that 2 times, once for each writer, and then just kind of close with sharing our goals for writing.
What do you mean by writing to a prompt?
Actually this last Saturday, we wrote about school lunches. It's a prompt from a book called Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. So just kind of a general idea, and then you just write about it.
But how long are the meetings?
2 hours, generally.
You go on the first Saturday of every month?
First Saturday are set aside for critiques, and the 3rd Saturdays are for the time to discuss readings.
If people are interested, what should they bring to the first meeting? Just themselves and a pad and paper?
Yep, and something to write with. Yeah, and a good thing to do would be email me, just so that if they're coming to either a critique or reading, I can forward them either the pieces that we're critiquing or the reading that we'll be doing.
So you critique things that are written kind of like on the spot. Do you critique longer works?
We've asked members to keep the pieces for critiquing somewhere between 3 and 15 pages. And we get them a week in advance so that we've read them and actually made comments before we come to the meeting, so that we have a little bit more informed discussion when we're actually talking about the pieces.
When you're doing a critique, do you say things like, you shouldn't use that verb in here, or do you get down to the nuts and bolts?
It depends. Each writer kind of tells us what they're looking for most. So maybe they are focusing on, did I do a good job with my verbs? Or sometimes it's, what confuses you in the plot? Or, you know, are my metaphors working? Those kinds of things. It just depends on what the writer needs.
What are some of your favorite tools in writing, like metaphors?
I really do love figurative language. It's incredibly difficult, I think, to not use things that have already been thought of. So to be original and innovative with metaphor is really a struggle for me. But I think the more you do it, the better you get.
What do you see as the future of their group?
Well, I hope we just really support each other as writers. I hope we give each other a lot of inspiration and insight to be good writers. I started a similar group back when I lived in Anchorage, and it was very inspirational for me, really changed me as a writer. So,
mm-hmm. You want to share your email so people could talk to you about it?
Yes. It's Patterjen, Patterjen, @gmail.com.
What kind of things do you see as the future of the group?
Just continuing to help each other write, I think. And personally, I will be at the Rookery. The meetings are at 1 p.m. at the Rookery on those Saturdays. And then when it's not a first or third Saturday, I'll be there just writing. So.
Starting about 1 o'clock?
Yep.
All right, Jennifer Walker, thank you very much for coming down to the station. You want to talk about a little bit about a youth writing contest?
Yeah. So I'm also involved in an organization called Write Young Alaska, which is through 49 Writers. 49 Writers just supports writers in Alaska, and Write Young Alaska does that for young writers. And right now we're running a flash fiction contest. That's fiction that's really short, 200 words or less. And you can find all the details at writeyoungak.com.
And Jennifer, you want to share your email one more time for those people who might have missed it?
Sure. Patterjen, Patterjen, @gmail.com.
Jennifer, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 7th of March, 2012. 1923, on this day, Robert Frost's poem Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening was published, the poem that he called his best bid for remembrance. Frost originally claimed that he wrote it all at once, but an early draft of the poem shows that it was reworked several times. He said the poem was about a December night when he drove a wagon to town with some produce from his farm to sell so he could buy Christmas gifts for his family. He couldn't sell a single thing. Evening came. It started to snow, and he had to head back home. He was almost home when he was overwhelmed by a feeling of shame, and the horse stopped, and Frost sat in the wagon, and he wept like a baby, he said. Eventually, the horse jingled its bells, and Frost pulled himself together, and he headed back home to his family. It's the birthday of the novelist Bret Easton Ellis, born Los Angeles, 1964, published his first novel, Less Than Zero, when he was 21, undergrad at Bennington, the graphic story of wealthy teenagers in Los Angeles and their world of drugs and sex. Ellis probably most famous for his novel American Psycho, about Patrick Bateman, the investment banker serial killer. His most recent book is Imperial Bedrooms. It's the birthday of the novelist Robert Harris, born Nottingham, England, 1957. He was a journalist, vacationing in Italy, lying on the beach, listening to German tourists talking all around him, when he suddenly imagined that he was living in the victorious German Empire. He got up, he went swimming in the ocean, and by the time he came back to shore, he had an outline in his mind for a novel about what the world would be like if the Nazis had won World War II. That novel was Fatherland. It was an international bestseller in 1991. Went on to write many other books, including Enigma, about British codebreakers, World War II, Archangel, and his most recent, The Fear Index. Robert Harris, who said, "It is perfectly legitimate to write novels which are essentially prose poems, but in the end, I think, a novel is like a car, and if you buy a car and grow flowers in it, you're forgetting that the car is designed to take you somewhere else." And it's the birthday of Rick Bass, born Fort Worth, Texas, 1958, a geologist who read Jim Harrison's novella Legends of the Fall, and it decided him on becoming a writer. 1987, he and his wife moved to northwestern Montana to the Yaak Valley in the Kootenai National Forest. He's written more than 25 books of fiction and nonfiction, including The Lives of Rocks, Why I Came West, and most recently, Nashville Chrome. Here's a poem for today by Galway Canal, In a Parlor Containing a Table. In a parlor containing a table and three chairs, three men confided their inmost thoughts to one another. I, said the first, am miserable. I am miserable, the second said. I think that for me the right word is miserable, said the third. Well, they said, it's 1:45. Good night. Cheer up. Sleep well. You too. You too. You too. In a Parlor Containing a Table, poem by Galway Canal, from The Avenue Bearing the Initial of Christ into the New World, published by Mariner Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Betsy Allister. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:16, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest comes to us by the magic of the telephone. Anna Pesci is the director of a film called Splinters. It's all about surfing. She showed the last couple nights at the Goaltender Clothing Theater and is also showing the 12th and the 13th of next week. Anna, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
So Splinters, you want to describe the title first, if you could, please?
Yeah, sure. Splinters is is the title of the film. Young children will ride. Firstly, it's about surfing in Papua New Guinea and the effect of the introduction of the surfboard to this remote village called Vanimo. And people will ride broken canoes as surfboards and also carve wooden boards out of the forests behind their homes based on the images they've seen in Western surfing magazines.
And you follow a group of surfers looking to win a competition there?
Yeah, I came to Vanimo after hearing that the first national surfing competition was going to happen, and I was interested to document hopefuls in the lead up to that event. 20 years prior, an Australian pilot had left a surfboard, and kind of like in the film The Gods Must Be Crazy, the quest to understand the purpose of this foreign element kind of went, and I saw the culmination of this introduction as the competition ensued. So that was for the genesis of the project.
Now, this film only features male surfers?
No, I followed two male surfers, Angelus and Ezekiel, Angelus Lapahi and Ezekiel Farr, and two female surfers, Leslie and Susan Oompa, who are sisters. And it was really fascinating to me to see the surfing prowess in one family for the women in the country. But surfing isn't just an athletic exercise, and it's not just an art form. It really is something of a mechanism for introducing Western values, and the women in this village are routinely beaten, and tragically domestic violence is off the charts in Papua New Guinea, and the surfboard really has some more egalitarian Western values associated with it, and the women effectively could become beneficiaries of that, and that was something that I was curious about and wanted to explore in the film as well.
The film has gathered several positive reviews and screenings. What makes it unique as far as surfing films go?
I think what's unique about it is that it has appealed to diehard surfers. I grew up surfing in Southern California, so I was definitely had a very personal interest in it, and you know, watched surf films since I began surfing. And I think what's been unique about it is that it's been able to appeal to diehard surfers that may not typically be interested in documentary films. But on the flip side, it's appealed to non-surfers, people who wouldn't know so much about the latest surf films coming out, but appreciate documentary films that are just particularly story driven. And I was really, really influenced by and really astounded by the works of Steve James, in particular Hoop Dreams. And I really love the immersion of the filmmaker Mark Singer applied in his film Dark Days. And I think the film has a good mix of both sports films and immersive documentaries and also surf films.
What kind of special equipment do you use other than waterproof cameras?
The special equipment used was definitely my brain. The filmmaking didn't really commence until I'd spent quite a bit of time there. I shot for 6 out of 9 months by myself, and I ended up being the translator on the film. And for the first 2 months, I barely shot anything, but I was set myself to the task of learning the national language, which is Melanesian Pidgin or Tokpisin, and that was really the primary tool was learning the language and being able to hopefully immerse myself in the best way possible in the village with no running water and power and malaria. Once that had sort of settled, I used a mini DV camera, which was the technology I could afford at the time, and I think there's probably more resolution on an iPhone these days.
How many hours of film did you shoot, or video did you shoot?
I shot about 300 hours, and the film clocks in at about 94 minutes, so that's the ratio there is quite distinct, but it was definitely a very tedious task in the editing process, but we had an incredible experience, and I had an incredible experience working with a fantastic woman named Kim Roberts, who is our editor, and she had also edited films such as Food Inc. and Waiting for Superman, and she was absolutely a gem to work with, so she was incredible.
What are the surfing conditions like in Papua New Guinea compared to other places in the world?
Well, it depends on the type of surfer you are, but the waves there, it's bathtub-like water. It's only a few degrees off the equator, and it's, for intermediate surfers, something of a dream come true. And, a lot of people flock to the waves of Indonesia because they're a bit powerful and more for experts. But I think Papua New Guinea is definitely a fantastic place for people just coming to the sport, or even those who are, like challenging waves as well. And surfing was a part of my my daily routine there, and it was absolutely a dream come true for me as a surfer to be in Banama Village.
For those of us who are geographically challenged, too lazy to open up an atlas, could you tell me where Papua New Guinea is?
Sure, it's just north of Australia, and it shares a border with Indonesia. And I was in Banama, which is in the province of Sundown, and just neighbors Indonesia. It's just a few kilometers, more than a few kilometers away, but a few hours drive.
How is the surfing competition judged?
Oh yeah, the surfing competition was judged as any other professional surfing competition in the world was judged. Glenn Elliott, who is the head judge, or was at the time for the Association of Surfing Professionals, which is the world tour that goes around with all the best surfers on it competing for huge prizes and sponsorship money. He was actually the one designing and organizing the contest. So the rules and the way in which the contest was judged was on a Western scale. The villagers and everyone competing had a steep challenge ahead of them, trying to bend to those rules and be aware of them and play by the West rules effectively.
I'm talking with Adam Pesci, the director and filmmaker of the film called Splinters. It's showing next week, the 12th and 13th, at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. Adam, what kind of story do you think comes out as the highlighted story of the film, or is it a mixture of stories?
You know, it's sort of a I would say it's an ensemble cast, but you know, it follows the desires of four individuals to effectively leave their small town for the promise of life in the big city, and that big city being Australia and the West more largely. While it's about this agent of change, the surfboard coming in, I think it has elements that examine the nature of dreams and how they can evolve conception to execution.
If people need more information about the film, how can they find it on the web?
Yeah, please look us up on Facebook. It's just facebook.com/ Splinters Movie or splintersmovie.com. We'd love to hear from you. And the film is also available on iTunes right now.
All right, Dan Pesci, thank you very much for talking to us. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I hope to hear from any Alaskan surfers should they be able to attend the screening, and really curious to get your feedback.
All right, Adam, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Hey, thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Time is 3:28. You are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Ed Byerski here to talk about the Greater Lincoln Hill Garden Conference, which is going on March 16th to 18th in Haines. Ed, thank you very much for being on the station with me today.
Glad to be here, Jeff.
So an overview of the conference, please.
We are going to be, it's going to be a green conference. This is on St. Patrick's Day weekend, and Friday night, a talk by Bob Henderson. This is all happening in Haines, mostly at the school. Some of it is also at KHNS, up at the Chilcat Center. And then all day Saturday, garden talks and workshops, some hands-on stuff. And everybody is, I would think, all gardeners at least, are getting spring fever.
Why did you pick this time of year to do the gardening conference?
This is a good time of year. May or beyond that, of course, we're all too busy to do this kind of stuff. This time of year, we are thinking about gardening, dreaming about gardening, looking outside, thinking we're to shovel the snow off our beds, and starting seeds. A lot of folks are starting seeds. I just bought some potting soil today. So it is the time, really, for enthusiasm, which is building in gardeners.
Growing, you should say.
We are growing, yes. We are growing, we will be growing, and we're optimistic that this summer is going to be a better one than last summer.
So is the Greater Lynn Canal Garden Conference in Haines for master gardeners only?
No, everybody. Anybody interested in gardening, we were asked whether the master gardeners in the past have done garden conferences every 2 years in Juneau. Folks in Sitka have also done some in alternate years. And since it wasn't happening here, several of us decided we're gaining contacts in Haines, so we're going to do it up there. And Skagway people are coming, and Juneau people are coming, and anybody else who can work out the schedule. Ferry schedule is convenient out of Juneau and Skagway to get to Haines, up on Friday, back on Sunday.
And I understand the Halsingland Hotel is not open, so there's just a couple of choices of hotel rooms other than...
There's quite a few, yeah, there's hotels, but there's also a lot of bed and breakfasts. And through the, on the Master Gardener website, I've got a listing of some, just a few of the B&Bs, but I also have the Haines, the main Haines website, which has links to more of the opportunities for people to get there and places to stay. And the Master Gardener website is www.seakmg.org.
How much does it all cost?
This is a pretty low budget affair. The all-day Saturday, which includes lunch, is $30 for tickets. We are asking for a donation Friday night for Bob Henderson's talk about the history of agriculture in the Chilkat Valley. And then I'm doing a pruning workshop on Sunday late morning. Again, a small donation is asked if folks are going to participate. So it's pretty low budget. Of course, you got to get to Haines and camp out there, too.
And Charlotte Jewell of Jewell Gardens in Skagway at the Garden City is also going to be there doing a Q&A.
Yes, she is. She's going to be a main speaker Saturday morning talking about... Exactly, Skagway, the Garden City, and then we'll be talking about herbs and edible flowers in one of our workshops.
What are some of the other workshops going on?
We've got the Real Skookum on garden seed catalogs and packets, how to read and interpret. We have one speaker who is growing interesting fruits in big greenhouse up there in Haines. Landscape pre-planning done by George Campbell, trying to help people avoid making some mistakes. So if they want to landscape in their backyard, they keep the path open so you can get to the backyard maybe a few years later. And I'm going to talk about potatoes and garlic, one of my many favorite subjects.
And Darren Snyder's going to talk on homestead food production.
He will do that, and that's going to be kind of an open thing, talking about how much food people need, how much food people can grow in their yards, and then potentially how to store it, whether it be root cellars, drying, freezing, canning. And then we've got another extension person from Palmer coming down, Jeff Smink, who is a soils expert. So he's going to be talking about soils and fertility, as well as more high tunnel and small greenhouse building and production.
You're doing a workshop on growing potatoes and garlic.
Oh, yeah.
What's the secret for the people who won't be able to make it?
Well, the key, drainage, got to have a well-drained site for both of those. For the garlic, ideally, they would have planted garlic last fall. Normally, planting in fall, like same time we plant tulips and daffodils, and then harvesting end of July. It's hard to get the right kind of garlic to plant in the spring. You can certainly plant it from store-bought garlic. It isn't quite as good as some of the others. And with potatoes, really having fairly sandy and organic soil, full sun, of course, good drainage, and they are very productive. I mean, you can grow some serious tonnage of potatoes in a pretty small container or boxes or barrels. Doesn't take a lot of room. And they are so tasty, fresh, homegrown potatoes.
Is there a community in Southeast Alaska that lays claim to being the best place to grow gardens other than Jewel Skagway being the garden city?
Haines certainly can claim part of that, partly because they have something closer to real soil, up there.
What do you mean by
that? And they have a lot of flat ground.
What do you mean by real soil?
Real soil meaning some silty, sandy, with some organic matter in it, very often river bottom soil. We've got the Chilkat Valley, which has a lot of acreage that has been gardened in the past. And Bob Henderson's going to be talking about that. He's been up there. He's been gardening for 50 years in Haines. And he has several acres of his own ground, which is very nice stuff. But certainly they have drier conditions, warmer conditions than Juneau. They have to water their plants in the summertime.
Something we don't appreciate here in Juneau.
We can hope that we have to water something this summer, but often we don't. For us, very often the concern here is draining it off. And so, again, the Haines does have that advantage. They do have more heat. We're going to be doing some gardening up there this summer ourselves up at 18 Mile up the road a ways on some new property a friend has. So we're going to be learning about, we may try growing some sweet corn if we can keep the moose out of it.
Were there raccoons?
No raccoons in Alaska yet. Let's hope none show up. But, yeah, the moose and the bears are a challenge, and the porcupines, too. We'll see how we can combat all of those.
It looks like Rob Goldberg is doing a talk on growing fruit trees in high tunnels.
Yes. Yeah, I just talked to him today. He's been growing, he too has been growing fruit, at least. He says he's had great success with pie cherries and sweet cherries and apples so far. Sweet cherries are definitely more of a challenge in Southeast. And so he's talking about that. But also he's trying some of the little different stuff, some of the plums and apricots and other stuff in these high tunnels. His high tunnel is 24 by 48 by 16 feet high. So he still has dwarf to semi-dwarf trees, and he's got them trellised or staked inside there. I'm hoping to visit him this year. I've just heard about him, so he has we'll get to see his project. It's early in the early stages. He says he's only been doing that now for a year or two, where all the rest of his has been outdoors, and with some pretty good success too.
And Charlotte Jewell from Jewell Gardens in Skagway is talking about herbs and edible flowers.
Yes, at her operation, if folks get up there sometime, certainly she offers tours to folks as well as to people off the cruise ships, and she is the first certified organic garden in Southeast Alaska, and is growing. She has a small CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, where she's selling boxes of vegetables every week during the summertime. And so she's going to be talking about some of the herbs and flowers that she is growing in with the vegetables that, and going to tell how to grow them, what are good ones to grow, and things that you can add to your salads and to spice up your life.
We've been talking with Ed Byerski about the Greater Lynn Canal Garden Conference going on March 16th through 18th in beautiful Haines, Alaska. Ed, before we take you off on the air here today, advice for growers who are not going to be able to make the conference, what should they be putting in their gardening plans now?
Well, right now, this is a time I'm just getting ready to start my tomatoes. Some of the herbs also, this would be a time for doing that, certainly. The leeks, parsley, if you're growing onions from seed, this is the time for starting that stuff. Certainly, otherwise, seeds are available in the local stores, so it's time to start picking out your seeds at least. There's still a lot of snow out there in the garden and coming down out of the sky, rain too, but certainly if you can start planning your garden and getting into supplies, organic fertilizers, and that sort of thing is great work. Planning now, because I know as soon as the snow disappears, we're going to be out there pulling some of those weeds we missed last fall and going after the slugs, getting ready to put something in the ground.
A lot of this information can be found in the website. Do you want to mention the website one more time, please?
Yes, the Master Gardener website, there is at www.seakmg.org. And they will have a program next week, Wednesday at noon, at the Jack on some gardening stuff. These are ongoing monthly series also. More gardening stuff every month.
It's the season.
It is. Hopefully I'll get together with Matt Miller, and we'll be starting up our little morning garden talks every week here in the next soon.
I know a lot of people appreciate that.
Thank you, Jeff.
If I ask anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
Oh, let's hope. Let's hope for a great spring, an early spring. I was just looking at supposedly going from in between La Nina to El Nino or something. I don't know if that makes any difference to gardeners particularly, but it's going to be a good spring and a good summer for gardening.
Ed, thanks for coming down.
You're welcome.
station from Wynton Marsalis, a new CD called The Music of America.
This program is made possible by Marlon Tini's, partnering with K2 News to bring comedian Paula Poundstone of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me to Centennial Hall March 15th at 8 p.m. Tickets for Paula Poundstone at k2news.org, Hearthside Books, Marlon Tini's, and At the Door.
Glitters is public art creation and musical invention this Friday, March 9th at the Jack. Join us for this two-part event. Part one is all ages, starting at 5:08 with Ed Littlefield and Sarah Conroe, creating a huge public artwork. Then at 9:30, the event turns 21 and over for live music from Playboy Spaceman and Tiger Pilot, with a full bar and $5 admission. Be a part of a public work of art that all of Juneau will see and hear musical invention as it happens. Come to Glitters this Friday at the Jack.
Time is 3:46 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Jeffrey Plow and Matt Lillard from Eagle Crest here to talk about Eagle Crest and the High Gravity Games. Thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thanks for having us this afternoon, Matt.
Thank you, Jeff.
No, Matt's sitting next to you. I'm confused. So first of all, conditions lately in Eagle Crest?
Well, it's been snowing.
Yeah, we picked up, I'd say, over a foot and a half of snow in the past 2 days. It's snowing up there right now, a little wetter than it has been, and we're looking for some more snow tonight, so tomorrow should be a great day.
I've asked you before this, Jeffrey, but what are the differences in skiing through the wet snow versus the dry snow?
Well, the wet snow, you definitely have to work a little bit harder. It has to be a little more muscle oomph to turn the skis, but it can definitely be fun. And with all the new gear out there, the rockered skis, they certainly make short work out of our conditions. So it's going to be a great, like Matt said, a great day tomorrow.
Rocker skis?
Rocker skis.
Mm-hmm. Describe those, please.
Just a little bit more reverse camber. So they're turned up at the tip and the tail, and a little easier entry into the turn, and they float on the powder a little bit better.
Kind of like water skis, Jeff.
Imagine there's a lot of work that goes into designing skis, a lot of high-tech stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. Yep, and it's continually changing. It's hard to keep up with it.
Where do they do the testing?
Just each ski company has their own testing and research and design, and it's kind of all over the world in a variety of different conditions.
Mm. Forecast for the next few days?
A little bit of wet stuff, maybe a little rain, but we're hoping for snow, and then snow through the weekend.
And spring break is coming up around the corner?
Spring break is just around the corner, and we're going to be open daily starting March 15th through March 26th for the spring break holidays. The snow bus will run daily March 17th through March 25th, and we've got holiday camps going, and you can find all that information on our website at skijuneau.com.
How do people catch the snow bus?
They can find the schedule at skijuneau.com, and it has a variety of stops all around town.
Coming up this weekend is the High Gravity Games.
It is.
Yes, that's right. With Alaska Brewing, we've got the High Gravity Games coming up. It's going to be a great event on Sunday. And kicks off with a startup cup at 1:30 p.m.
And this is our second annual High Gravity Games. Last year we partnered up with Alaska Brewery to have the High Gravity Games in celebration of their 25th anniversary. And everybody liked it so well. We liked it so well. Alaska Brewery liked it so well. We decided we're going to try and make this an annual event. And so we're doing it again on Sunday. And I just want to remind everyone, this is a 21 and older event, but we're going to have a great time between the Startup Cup Relay, the Keg Toss, and the Crash Cool Dummy Competition.
Anything else going on? That sounds like a lot of excitement by itself.
Yep, the High Gravity Games, it's a great event, a lot going on. Like Matt says, starts out with the Startup Cup. We're going to run an extra bus from the Transit Center starting at 12:30 on Sunday afternoon, and it'll depart Eagle Crest at 6. So if folks want to come up, it's a great spectator event. There's going to be a beer garden put on by the Alaska Brewery. So if you want to come up and check it out, see what's going on, catch the bus at the Transit Center, and catch it from Eagle Crest at 6 o'clock.
Tell me more about the relay, if you could, please, Matt.
Certainly. The relay is a race. It's got four different legs, starting with alpine skiing, Nordic, snowshoe, and a human dog sled. So it's a fun event.
You have to elaborate on that human dog sled.
Essentially, there is a human that is strapped to a sled with a person on it, and they pull him around.
This is kind of in commemoration of the Iditarod that's going right now. And so we actually go up over Rainy Pass and kind of follow some of the areas of the Iditarod at Eagle Crest, and just a celebration of the Iditarod.
Okay, you've got the relay and you get the cake toss. Describe the cake toss.
Well, there's a what it is it's the top of the standard kegs you see. They weigh a couple pounds, and it's a competition that costs $5 to enter, and it's how far you can throw it. And all the money raised for the event does go to the American Red Cross. So along with the keg toss, we'll also be having bratwurst grilled out on the deck and some other food and live music and an MC. So it's going to be a great event, lots of fun.
What does the rest of the season look like for Eagle Crest?
Busy, snow, and good skiing and snowboarding. And it's been an amazing season so far. And we're pretty sure we've broke a record. We know we broke a record at the base, and I'm sure we broke a record many other places on the mountain, too, with our snow depth. So we're looking to finish off the season very strong.
And if you haven't learned to ski yet, there's still skiing lessons available?
Oh, there's still skiing lessons available. Now is a great time to learn how to ski or snowboard because we've got plenty of snow. The daylight's here. Our days are getting longer, and the weather's warmer. So we just encourage people, if they do want to learn to ski or snowboard, to make sure they make a reservation so they don't get turned away at the window. And they can call the snow sports school for more information or visit our website and get that phone number.
What are the hours for Eagle Crest these days?
9 to 4.
And when do you close?
April 15th.
April 15th, all right. Jeffrey Clown, Matt Lillard, thank you very much for coming by. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just a reminder for those folks that are attending the High Gravity Games, it is a 21 and older event, and all the proceeds does go to the American Red Cross. Make sure you bring your ID and bring your cash.
And Jeffrey and Matt, thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Jeff.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
I'm Rachel Burchard, and I'm 14 years old.
How long have you been skateboarding?
Probably since I was 4. I got better maybe around 9. Came to Joel's place. People are teaching me tricks, just getting better every day.
Does it take a lot of practice to get better?
Yes, a lot of practice. Just like fall, you get back up and try again.
Rachel is exemplary as far as a young person around here.
That's Emma Milam. She's the adult program director at Joel's Place. Joel's Place is an indoor skate park, youth center, and ministry in Fairbanks. Rachel's a regular there and a standout kid, and not just for her skating. Recently, Emma says she needed teen volunteers for a seasonal skate camp.
Rachel has a real strong desire to be here, and the youth that want to be here and want to grow up here, I want to see them have a part of Joel's Place.
So for 6 weeks, Rachel helped instruct. Emma says she's a natural.
She was encouraging. She would challenge them. She was very aware of each one of them and their needs.
Worked the whole 6 weeks with everybody. It was fun for the most part and exciting because I've never done it before, and now I guess I can help people when they ask me for it.
So do you think you'd do it again? Like if there's a camp next summer or some other time, would you volunteer?
Yes, I would. It's pretty fun. I can't wait.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
You are tuned to KTUO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inland and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on Digital Channel 871. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, talk with some of the people involved in Perseverance Theater's production of A Raisin in the Sun. We'll also talk about Tom Carlsgrove's Nearly Normal Road Trip. Dr. Donald Steadman will be here with a preview of his talk tomorrow night on ozone pollution. And Jennifer Klein will be talking about the Five Finger Lighthouse fundraiser. And Nancy DeTourney will be here to give us news on rundowns and arts happening in the capital city. Thanks for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a great evening.